Softy Mahler of KJR Radio in Seattle was there. He covered it for the station, and we bring him on now. He covers the Washington Huskies and Coach Pete very thoroughly over in Seattle. Softy, we appreciate your time. As you came back from Hollywood, what are some of the big stories that are happening this year in the Pac-12?
Yeah, I don't know if they're – I mean, first of all, it depends on your perspective, right? I mean, if you're a Washington fan, I guess maybe your perspective is this going to be UW and USC in the Pac-12 final, and should we just cancel the rest of the season right now and get to December and play the game tonight? If you're USC, you know, can they live up to expectations? You know, Sam Darnold was on with us, and by the way, he's a very large man, no doubt. I mean, in stature and on the field, and you know, he said flat out anything short of a national championship for them is a disappointment. So there really wasn't one big storyline. You know, with Larry Scott, it continues to be, why is your network not on DirecTV? What about expansion? They're changing some replay stuff, and they're shortening halftime, tinkering with shortening halftime during the non-conference. So, I mean, guys, look, I mean, I go down there with a very narrow-minded perspective on this stuff. I just want to talk Husky football with everybody.
All right, let's talk Husky football with you. You said last year, Softy, you thought they were going to be good. Did you think they'd be as good as they were?
I did not think they'd make the Final Four. I thought they would have a great shot of winning the Pac-12 North, playing for the Pac-12 championship, maybe going to a Rose Bowl, but I never really thought much about a Final Four semifinal against Alabama until they beat Stanford on that Friday night in Week 5, I think it was, when they crushed the Cardinal 44-6. That's kind of when everything started to change. So, yeah, I mean, look, I think we all thought with all these guys coming back, they'll be really, really good. They could be a double-digit win team, compete for a conference title. But I don't know. I mean, when you haven't won a national championship in 25 years, I don't think anybody really sits around thinking we're going to compete for one right now until you actually do.
We're obviously fascinated with Coach Peterson here in Boise. I was looking at your timeline, and it looks like he's building a small little wall of intimidation there. I loved what Clay Helton said. What he's creating up there is going to last a long time. And then Rich Rod saying, I hate it. It sucks. In terms of what Peterson is building up there. Is he building a little bit of intimidation up there?
I don't know if it's intimidation as much as it is just respect, to be totally honest with you. I mean, look, I mean, guys, you know this as well as I from the time you had him in Boise. He was already respected when he came to Seattle, okay? I mean, this was the biggest name head coach that the Huskies have ever hired, meaning when Don James came to Seattle, he wasn't the Don James that he was 15 years ago. He was a no-name nobody from Kent State. Nobody knew who he was. He played quarterback at Miami, okay? I mean, Neuheisel, maybe after a couple years at Colorado, but they've never, at the time they've hired the guy, hired a more respected guy across the country than Chris Peterson. So everybody respects him anyway. He's kind of like the godfather. He's kind of like the E.F. Hutton of the conference, right? When he talks, people listen. For all you folks out there that remember the old advertising campaign from the 80s, sure. I mean, Rich Rod had some great stuff to say, as you saw. Clay Helton had some great stuff to say. I didn't even put on Twitter what Kyle Whittingham said about him. He said he's elite. You know, the program's going to be elite. I mean, all these guys just totally look up to Chris Peterson, even though he's not the longest tenured coach in the conference. I mean, that honor obviously falls to David Shaw. But all these dudes, whether they're younger, older, rookie coaches, veteran coaches like Whittingham, they just look at Chris Peterson and they just have a tremendous amount of respect for him. And it was obvious. It was obvious just looking into the faces of the guys I was talking to in the last 2 days.
You mentioned USC quarterback Sam Darnold, giant, massive of a man.
Yeah.
Chris Peterson still likes his quarterbacks overrated. He talks about how the physical aspect of the position is overrated. Height, arm strength, foot speed, all overrated. He wants a Kellen Moore. He wants Mr. Browning. Is that kind of what he's got there right now?
Well, I talked. It's funny that you mentioned that that quote from Pete. I think that may have come from the NFL Network stuff that he did. I don't know. Maybe it was at the podium. Maybe it was somebody else. But I talked to my buddy Daniel Jeremiah, who was doing a feature the whole week on what coaches in the Pac-12 look for in college football quarterbacks. And he told me, DJ did, this is even before the podcast came out, that Peterson looks for accuracy and decision-making before anything else, right? Like the intangibles, I mean, the physical traits, height, weight, foot speed, arm strength, all that stuff. not even, it's like way down the radar. And it just got me thinking about, okay, what the guys that he won with at Boise, Jared Zebranski, does Jared Zebranski strike you as a unbelievable Adonis of an athlete? Well, no. Does Kellen Moore strike you as that kind of guy? Well, no. Does Jake Browning strike you as that kind of guy? Well, no. And then you go into next year and next year's recruiting class, and that actually is starting to change. And I wonder if Chris Peterson up until now maybe hasn't had access, if that makes any sense, to quarterbacks like that. And now that he's at Washington, he may have access to guys like that. I mean, Jacob Sermon is 6'5", 226, for crying out loud, okay? I mean, you look at this kid who's coming in next year, and he is not Kellen Moore. He is not Jake Browning, and he is not Jared Zebranski. He's a different cat. He's built differently. He looks differently, and he passes the eye test. Colson Yankoff. You guys know Colson from Idaho. He's 6'3", about 210, so he's a bigger guy. And then they got Dylan Morris coming in from Graham Kapowsin in 2019. He's a bigger guy, so it's great that Pete says all that, and I think it's great that he's won with players like that, and he's probably right about accuracy and decision-making being the most important thing. But now, all of a sudden, now that he's played for a Final Four, he's starting to land some guys that don't exactly look like the quarterbacks he's won with before. I find it fascinating.
The league starts with Browning and Darnold as the top quarterbacks, but there's also Rosen and Falk and a couple of guys in the middle that are just as good. Is this the best quarterback crop you've seen in the Pac-12 in a while?
It's pretty good. I mean, I'm just trying to think of, you know, the Matt Leinart, Andrew Luck, you know, those types of years. For example, Jake Locker was there as well, and then you go back to, like, Rodney Pete Aikman back in the 80s and 90s. And I mean, look, I mean, it's amazing to me still, though, today, how many teams in this conference don't have a quarterback or don't have a guy that you really trust if you're a head coach or a football fan. I mean, if you're a Utah fan, do you really trust Troy Williams to be your guy? If you're an Oregon State fan, do you really trust Daryl Gerritsen or Marcus McMarion to be your guy? If you're an ASU fan, do you love Manny Wilkins as your guy in Arizona State? If you're an Arizona fan, do you feel like, you know, Brandon Dawkins is really trustworthy as a guy who was at like 53% throwing the ball a year ago? I mean, USC, UCLA, Washington State, UW, to me, have the best four quarterback situations in the conference. And those are the four teams that I would put at the top of the conference right now. I would put Wazoo ahead of Stanford because of Luke Falk versus Keller Christ. And right now he's banged up. And David Shaw told me yesterday that he's not even sure if he can play in the opener against Rice in Australia. So you got to have a quarterback. I mean, I'm not breaking new ground here. This is not an unbelievable borderline genius opinion here. But it just strikes me as nuts today how many schools in the Pac-12 don't have a QB. I mean, California's got a brand new head coach in Justin Wilcox, who obviously you guys know very well. Davis Webb threw every pass for California a year ago from the quarterback spot. I think they had a punter throw one pass. There's not one quarterback on the Cal roster right now that threw a pass in college football last year. So you tell me what that does to their chances of winning in 2017. You got a quarterback like Wazoo, like UCLA, like USC and UW, and you're absolutely going to separate yourself from everybody else.
KJR's Softy Mahler attended Pac-12 Media Days down in Hollywood, talking Pac-12 with him. Before we move on, Softy, to some of the other teams in the conference, Washington, yep. Where might they have trouble? Is there something that has to come through for them to win the North, to beat USC, and get back to the Final Four?
Well, yeah, there's a couple spots. I mean, overall, I really like the team, clearly, but there's a couple spots, and amazingly enough, I would think that they're on defense. I mean, you lost three starters in your secondary who are all in the NFL, and Buda Baker, Cindy Jones, and Kevin King. I mean, I can tell you right now that the guys that are stepping in are really good, but that's not going to matter until they show it in September. I can tell you how awesome I think Jordan Miller is going to be and how great I think Byron Murphy is going to be and JoJo McIntosh and Zeke Turner. And the one guy they have coming back is the freshman of the year in the Pac-12 on defense and Taylor Rapp, who had two picks in the Pac-12 championship versus Colorado. So, I mean, they look awesome. They passed the eye test. They look great in practice. They were highly recruited guys. I mean, Alex Molden's kid from Oregon, Elijah Molden, has signed up as a freshman, and he may play right away. So I think anytime you lose three starters in your secondary, yeah, I mean, you got to look at that and just say, hey, we like these guys in practice. We like them on tape. We love the measurables. I mean, Jordan Miller has a 41-inch vertical leap, for God's sakes. That would have been like number five at the NFL Combine a year ago, okay? So he's got some hops. So they look good to me, but we don't know until they start playing 5 weeks from tonight against Rutgers. And the other spot, I guess, on defense would be maybe the defensive lineman. Look, I'm kind of nitpicking here, right? I'm looking for weaknesses. I'm turning over every rock because I think that's what coaches would probably do. But the defensive line lost Elijah Qualls a year early to the NFL. They've got Vita Vea back, which is a huge, huge – I mean, that may have been Peterson's biggest recruiting coup of the offseason, is getting Vita Vea to come back to school. This guy would have been a first-rounder. Now he's going to come back to be maybe a top-10 pick in next year's draft. So he's great. Greg Gaines is great. But what about everybody else? What about a pass-rushing defensive end? I don't know if they have one guy who really concerns quarterbacks off the edge. They got a kid named Benning Potoaie on the edge that they may end up, you know, sending more often than not. Maybe they unleash Azeem Victor at the outside linebacker spot a bit more. But I would say just maybe the lack of a real established edge rusher and maybe some depth on the defensive line for now, and then just kind of waiting to see if that young secondary is as advertised. If there's any concerns / weaknesses, that would probably be it.
Hang on, Softy. We'll talk about the rest of the Pac-12 in just a minute. We bring Softy Mahler back from KJR. He's been down at the Pac-12 Media Days in Hollywood. So, Softy, what does Washington State have this year?
Well, I don't know if they'll be better than last year, but they're better than they've been. I mean, they lost Gabe Marks and River Craycraft, which you kind of saw what happened. And by the way, I know a lot about the Cougars because we play them every year, and I live with these people and work with them, so I have no choice but to know a lot about them, which is kind of painful, to be honest with you. But they lost Craycraft in that Colorado game, and they just were never the same. Gabe Marks is obviously gone, and he was a favorite target for Luke Falk. I mean, the one thing I would say about Washington State is they have totally rebranded their offense, and nobody has even noticed it because they are still built around their quarterback. For example, 3 years ago, people used to kind of, you know, jump on Mike Leach for not running the ball. They averaged 40 yards a game 3 years ago. Last year, they averaged 120. So they've added 80 yards a game to their offense with guys like Morrow and Wicks, who are both back this year. And their passing numbers have gone down. Their passing yards have dropped about 100 yards a game in the last 3 years, and their running numbers have gone up about 80 yards a game in their last 3 years. So they're a different animal in that regard. Their offensive line is really, really good. I mean, if you look at, like, the analytics from ProFootballFocus.com, four of the top five graded returning players in the conference, I think, are from Washington State, and, like, three of them are on their offensive line. So they're going to try to run the ball a lot because they got to keep Luke Falk healthy. I mean, he's missed an Apple Cup. He's been banged up before. The goal for them to even give themselves a chance to win in the North is having Luke Falk healthy for 12 weeks. So I would expect they'd run the ball even more than they did a year ago. So, yeah, I mean, it's a different deal with them. But, I mean, the problem with Washington State, and I even asked Leach about this directly. I said, what's the deal with the Apple Cup? Because this is now 4 years in a row where a Washington State offense that averages like 35-plus a game is held to 17, 13, 10, 14 in the Apple Cup. Every year for 4 years in a row, they play in this game, and they play the Husky defense, and that high-octane offense just totally falls apart. So that's been their issue, is towards the end of the year, especially in the Apple Cup, they can't sustain it. They come out early in the year against FCS teams, and they totally fall apart. So I don't know, man. There's a lot of questions in Washington State about, I think, whether or not that system can actually win them a conference championship. Keep in mind, when he was at Texas Tech, I think he won the Big 10 or the Big 12 one time, and that was with Crabtree when he was in Lubbock. So there you go.
We're visiting with KJR's Softy Mahler. He was at Pac-12 Media Days. You're listening to Sports Radio The Ticket.
If you don't like Washington State, let's also put the Oregon Ducks on that list. But you've been loving what's going on in Eugene the last couple of years. Last year, one of the worst defenses in the country. They have a new defensive coordinator. They have a quarterback who's catching some attention. What's going on in Eugene?
Well, what's going on in Eugene is they have a new guy, and I don't know about this guy, Willie Taggart. He was on my show yesterday. Doesn't have a lot of personality. I'll tell you that right now. Didn't strike me as a guy with a lot of charisma. Now, what that means in the end, maybe nothing, maybe everything. I just think it's going to be a hard deal for him in year one because of how bad their defense was. I mean, their defense was awful, okay? They were terrible last season. Oregon State, who really had nothing on offense as far as the quarterback position, they beat these guys last year. That's how bad their defense was. Now, obviously, they were kind of mailing it in towards the end of the year when it was obvious that I think Mark Helfrich was going to get fired, they're going to move on. They've had all these coaches there, Gary Campbell, Steve Greatwood, blah, 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 that have been there forever, and they've turned their entire coaching staff over. All those dudes that were there for some of them like 25, 30 years, honestly, are all gone. So there's a brand-new coaching staff, brand-new assistant coaching staff. They went out and they paid $1 million. You guys may have heard this, to get Jim Leavitt, the D.C. from Colorado, to come to Eugene to fix the defense. They had Brady Hoke a year ago, and I don't know what Brady Hoke did, but he was robbing Oregon blind because whatever he was getting paid to do, he didn't do it. That defense was a joke. I mean, Washington scored 70 on Oregon last year. They scored their 70th point with like 8 minutes to go in the game. They could have hung 90 on Oregon if they wanted to. It was that bad. Washington State tore them apart. Oregon State tore them apart. So if they don't fix the defense, it's not going to be a factor. I mean, they should be better on defense just by default, by showing up in the morning. They should be better, but how much better can they be? Can they be better to compete in the Pac-12 North? I don't think so. I mean, Royce Freeman's an amazing tailback, and you saw some flashes from Justin Herbert a year ago, I think, on what this guy could do, but he's still a sophomore quarterback and has a lot to prove. And they lost their best receiver in Darren Carrington when they kicked him off the team after the DUI charge, and now he's at Utah. So I think if you're Oregon, if you can get to 6-6 or 7-5, that's probably a big step in the right direction for them this year.
And Softy, moving down the coast in the North Division, former Boise State assistant, you mentioned Justin Wilcox was at his first media days. How was he received, and is the task as daunting as it would seem in Berkeley?
I think it's insanely daunting for a lot of reasons, and there's actually a part of me, Bob, that's actually a little bit surprised that Justin took the job, to be totally honest with you. I mean, look, I realize he's 40 years old. He's been at D.C. He's been all over the place. He's been Wisconsin, USC, UW, you guys, whatever, and he wants a shot, and he's going to take it. And maybe at California, if he can just kind of bring them back to mediocrity, maybe that'll be enough to kind of raise some eyebrows across college football and get him a better gig. But first of all, it's hard to get kids into school there. I mean, you know, a certain percentage of the kids have to be like geniuses to play football there because of their grade requirements. And then number two, their defense was so bad last year. They gave up like 48 points a game. I mean, I'm not kidding you. Look it up. It's so just painful, even as a football fan, to look and see what the California defense did a year ago, to think about 48 points a game. I mean, just let that number just sink in, 48. That's how many points they gave up. That's 12 points a quarter on average, two touchdowns and no PATs a quarter for Cal. So he's got to fix that. They got no quarterback on the roster that threw a pass in a game last year, as we said. Davis Webb threw every pass a year ago, and now he's gone. So he's got freshmen competing for the job. He's got, you know, guys that were back that backed up Davis Webb that didn't play competing for the job. Their best receiver, obviously, and Chase Hansen walked away to the NFL. He's with the Jets, I believe, now. So it's a ridiculously daunting task. And he wanted to go out and get Jimmy Lake to be his defensive coordinator from UW, and Jimmy Lake said no, didn't want to go down there. Because he didn't want to go to Cal. I mean, Jimmy Lake is a defensive coordinator at a Power 5 legit school, or he's a head coach at maybe a mid-major right now. That's going to be his next step. And if you're Jimmy Lake, would you rather stay with Chris Peterson for one more year, make, you know, 600 grand, half a million bucks, whatever it is, in Seattle, or go to California and potentially, you know, ruin your reputation by playing for a football team that does not have a fan base that cares about football and does not have a defense anywhere near in sight for the next 2 or 3 years? And, oh, by the way, you'd be coaching for a defensive-minded guy. If you're Jimmy Lake, you're going to go coach for an offensive-minded guy so you can have the defense and make it your own. That's why he didn't take the job. But, yeah, I mean, it's an insanely daunting task for Justin.
Softy, as you know, there's trouble in the desert, Arizona. Rich Rod, Marcel Yates on the defense, and then Coach Graham in Arizona State. We got two coaches on the hot seat. Can they survive it?
I think Todd Graham more so than Rich Rod, if you're asking between the two of them. I mean, they had, what was it, Arizona State had like 38 players miss a combined 120 games. Some stupid number from last year. So you can just blame injuries on ASU and what happened a year ago down there. Rich Rod, the biggest problem he's got is that the guy that hired him took off. Greg Byrne went to Alabama, the AD, right? So there's a new AD. He's been there for 6 years now. He was 10-4 3 years ago. for a guy that is known for offense. They don't have an offense. Their defense is terrible. They gave up 38 points a game a year ago. They got a quarterback who can run, but no quarterback right now who can throw. I mean, this kid Khalil Tate, a lot of fans are hoping that he's the man in Arizona. I mean, I saw Brandon Dawkins play, excuse me, last year, and he's a gazelle, but he can't throw the ball. So at some point, Rich Rod's got to make a choice at quarterback on what he wants to do down there. But I would think that for him, because his AD quit and went to Alabama, and because Todd Graham can potentially maybe look at injuries last year, that Rich Rod is, I think out of all the coaches on the hot seat in the conference, Rich Rod's seat is the hottest by far.
Pac-12 hasn't won a national championship in about 13 years. I think it's one of the longest droughts in the conference, but with so much attention being focused on Washington and USC and what the Huskies did last year, is there a potential for that drought to be broken this year?
Yeah, I would think so. And by the way, that number for California is 43. Let me just correct myself. It's 43, not 48. So it's still awful.
Saved him a touchdown.
5 points better, yeah. 43 points a game for Cal. Is there a potential for a national title team? Sure, of course there is. I mean, UW and USC, when the rankings come out, will likely be top 10 teams, the two of them. And they should meet. I mean, I think it'd be a minor upset if those teams did not meet in the Pac-12 championship, and if they're both undefeated because they don't play each other during the regular season, maybe one of them with a loss also sneaks in. You know, if UW is 12-0 and USC is 12-0 and they're ranked 1-2 in the rankings when they come out before that final in Santa Clara, maybe they both end up going no matter what happens in that game. But yeah, I mean, the last team to win a national championship, as you guys know, was USC. The last team to win a championship not named USC was Washington. That was back in 91, 26 years ago. So Jim Mora is right when he says, look, we can talk about lack of respect and nobody watches us play at night, but you want respect, you got to win a national title. They've got to have somebody in this conference win a national championship because, look, their games start at 7:30 at night. They're on at 10:30 on the East Coast. They don't end until 2 o'clock in the morning. On the East Coast, you're not going to stay up to watch that if you're in New York or if you're in Florida or if you're on, you know, North Carolina, you know, Boston, whatever. So they've got to find a way to have a team break through and win a national championship. And I would think that UW and USC would have just as good odds as anybody.